You can appreciate many, many things. You can appreciate many. For example, the Rambam brings that in Deos. It's actually something which is stated in Pirkei Avos. Truth is, the more you observe, the more you live, they say, the more you learn. Study Torah, and then you observe the scene. You observe your own behavior. You observe other people's behavior. You really see tremendous confirmation of the principles of Torah. One of the things that's extremely important, the Rambam says that a person should be marvei b'shikra, then he should increase silence. It's of course in the context of not speaking. This, with regard to speech, there's two aspects. One is that you have to avoid certain kinds of speech. Of course, there's sinful speech. There's lashon hara. Or there's hurtful speech to insult other people. I don't know if you guys realize it, but it's if you insult another person, you offend another person verbally. Verbal offense, is that just not a nice thing to do, or is it more significant than that? The answer is it's a losas de araisa. It's a negative commandment. You're not allowed to insult people. You're not allowed to verbally assault people or verbally offend people. Lotonu, onas devarim, that's verbal affliction. That's a biblical violation. It's not rabbinic, it's biblical. So no question that a person has to avoid those types of speeches. But then the Rambam says that beyond that, a person should seek to reduce their speech. Reduce their speech. And he says that essentially, you should only speak about words of wisdom, chachma, or necessities, whether it be the job, the necessities of life. A person shouldn't just speak for the sake of speaking. That's very interesting. Everybody else says, of course, well, if I speak, I must be speaking about something that's necessary. Not. That's not the way it works. People talk because they want to talk. Then, given that you want to talk, you have to have a subject. You have to have another individual. For many people, the other individuals, not because they want to hear what the person has to say, it's just that it looks foolish to stand there talking to yourself, so you have to have another person to justify the fact that you're speaking. But it's an inherent need to speak. The Rambam says that a person should reduce. That speech, God gave us speech for a reason. We should, before we speak and utilize anything, any faculty, we should seek to understand what it's there for. Oh, you mean there's a purpose? I thought it's just to get together and gossip and schmooze the whole time. What else do you do? Well, then why would a person want to go to shul if not to just talk the whole time? Isn't that most people think that the reason why God gave a speech is that you'd have something to do when you go to shul? Isn't that correct? Next time you go to a shul, ask what the reason is. That's the answer right there. What do you do during davening? Got to do something. So therefore, God gave a speech. The Rambam says that it is important to utilize, but to the greatest extent of our ability. We're not on a perfect level. A person uses speech only for that which it was designed for. Then it's helpful, then it's beneficial to communicate ideas, learning, knowledge, teaching, dealing with your necessities, communicating for important communication. But people on the highest level are extolled that they didn't waste speech for nonsense, for nonsensical purposes, where it can be very, very harmful. One of the most harmful things that people do to destroy their souls is speech. It's through speech. Speech has a very significant effect upon your whole psyche, upon your whole soul. You can tell yourself when you... Because after all, a person's always in a state of flux, spiritual flux. So a person can be in an inspired state. You prepared some ideas, you went to a shiur, and you're in the world, a different world of ideas, and things are very clear to you, and you're feeling a certain way. Then you can get together with a group of people who are basically like we call latesim, jesters, just joking about all kinds of nonsense, making fun out of things, and then it puts you in a different state. Now suddenly you're in a totally different state. That's why, for example, nivel peh, that is to engage in satisfaction of certain base sexual instincts through speech. That's very serious. Person's speech, first of all, a person should avoid all kinds of nivel peh. That's very prevalent in our society. It's very, very harmful. There are certain people that Not just basic, because it's part of the culture now. So even on any television program, you hear the four-letter word being used in virtually any other sentence. I'm sure about that. That is very... People should really... I instruct a lot of people that I deal with, you know, in the Jewish community that may not be that religious or whatever. It's just like they're in the habit of saying it. It's like another word. And I instruct them not to speak that way. That's very bad. Because rather than controlling the emotions underneath it and making an effort to express themselves intelligently, they're just resorting to certain emotional gratifications instead of thinking things through. Anyways, and he says that a person should be marbib mishasika. And then Chazal say, lo matzasi la guf tov mishasika. I have not found anything as beneficial for the body as silence. That's an interesting statement. That is, silence, practically speaking, is very beneficial. Not just for the soul, but even for the body. I mean, so on a practical level, my point is, I've made this point, that, well, the Rambam says, most of the trouble people get into in this world, in this life, is self-induced. Because that's what everybody's victim, no one wants to face that, so they're always blaming everything else. Everyone blaming somebody else, society, but it's essentially self-induced. Why did that person do this to me? That person convinced me. Yeah, why would you allow yourself to be convinced? If you track something down, you'll find there's very few totally innocent victims. The innocent victims in this world are the poor children that are born with a crack addiction or are born with HIV because of their parents. That's real victims. I said that in this world, a person's two greatest enemies. What would you say are a person's two greatest enemies? One is your own mouth. The other one is your best friend. Those are your two greatest enemies. This case will illustrate that. But everybody will hear it's your own mouth. How much trouble do people get into? I mean, not just... We're not talking anymore now about the bad effect that bad speech has on your soul. We're talking about, practically speaking, how many times in life... If you just would have kept quiet, because you had to go on and on. Alright? And you said this, said something. At the time you said it, you didn't think it meant anything, and you meant it one way, they took it a different way. How much trouble does a person get in because, or he was bragging, and in the course of bragging said certain things, or he wanted to impress this person, and God, I guarantee you that I'll do this for you, I'll do the other thing for you, you make all kinds of commitments which you're not going to keep. And you get yourself into trouble. Isn't that the truth? In any area of your life, talk about dating, marriage, business, any area of your life, yeah. And how many times, shisika, if you had practiced the art of shisika, which is to say, I don't mean just like you take a vow of silence and put tape over your mouth, although for many people that would be a good idea, but just learn when's a good time to keep quiet. And all these things, it really was unnecessary, but you just wanted to make a point, your ego was there, and yet people get into a certain situation and they just want to be themselves and impress others, and then they're just talking without any guard, so to speak. It's dangerous. Reckless talking. Reckless speech. Case in point, the situation with Trent Lott. Trent Lott is the leader of the Republican leader in the Senate. So that's a very, very prestigious, very important position. So now there's a huge controversy in which he may be called upon to step down, lose his position, whatever. I'm not interested in the politics of it. Now, how did he get himself into trouble? He was at a birthday party for another senator called Strom Thurmond. So nobody knows who he is either. Now, Strom Thurmond, again, I'm just giving you the basics, and I'm not going to quibble over the actual politics of it, but he's from Mississippi, or from the South.
South Carolina.
South Carolina. And Lott is from Mississippi, the South. So you guys may not remember this, but there was a time in history when the South practiced the segregation, or even slavery, and then it was a segregation. I know it's too far back in time for you to know anything about this, but they didn't believe in the idea of equality between the races, black and white. Now, a change has taken place in the last 30 years, significant change in terms of the whole country, the civil rights movement, but more significantly in the South itself. The South now is pretty integrated, as far as I know. So many of these same individuals, because being politicians, it wasn't such a matter of a principle, it's a matter of staying in power. So when this shift occurred, for example, George Wallace, he's former governor, he's dead now, former governor of Alabama, was a staunch racist, but then he changed over the years. He accommodated himself to the new wave, many of these same politicians. Because when that became the rage in the country, that became the way it is, that you have to accept it, it's unacceptable to be bigoted, so then they didn't want to lose their position, so they changed. Now, this Strom Thurmond is such an individual. He's been in the Senate for, he's 100, it was his 100th birthday, but he's been there for the last 30 years. I don't think he's been, I think he changed, and he's, whatever, they did some kind of chew, they repented for what they thought in the past, and they changed. All right, fine. Not getting into that. But in 1948, he ran for a president. I think he was a Democrat, was he running?
As a Dixiecrat.
He ran as a Dixiecrat, okay. And that is a third party in which the platform was states' rights. States' rights was sort of a euphemism for those who wanted every state to be free, to have its own kinds of laws with regard to segregation or integration, and not be under the control of the federal government. There was, in fact, that was a crucial point, because it was, in fact, only as a result of the federal government that desegregation was initiated. But at states' rights, if each state was free to have its own system as far as these things are concerned, then you would have still probably had segregation. All right, so he ran on states' rights, and he lost. So here we are, that's 1948, now we're in 2002. And Trent Lott, who does not have a reputation as being a segregationist or anything like that, all intents and purposes, this is a very significant moment in his life. The Republicans have just won a big victory, and he'll be the majority leader. So, there's a birthday party for Strom Thurmond. He's 100 years old, which is a huge achievement in and of itself. So Trent Lott gets up there, and he's speaking. He has to speak, and he goes off. You know, sometimes you go off, and you just keep talking. You say things you didn't have to say. But so why, we don't know. I could speculate as to why. He brings up a terrific. He's talking about how terrific Strom Thurmond is, which is acceptable. I mean, because today he's not a racist. But he says, "Yeah, and we in Mississippi in 1948, we supported you," and like he's trying to make a point that how great it would have been had you become the president, and so many things would have, the whole country, the whole course of our recently would have been different had you been elected. That was the point. So of course, what's the interpretation? Well, we don't know what he meant, but if you, well, first of all, if you're not a Republican, if you're a Democrat, if you're black, a black is going to say, what's he saying? How better things would have been. That means, are you saying that really, truly, you would have preferred that we never would have gone through this integration? That seems to be the plain meaning of the words. So, a firestorm erupts. He made a racist statement. How could this be? Now, you got to be aware that there's no tzaddikim in the story. The ones that are complaining, and it's not because they're so holy and all of that. There's very few such people. And basically, though they're his opponents, and whether they're Democrats, whatever it is, even Republicans. And but here he's giving them something. So what you have in this situation is that one mistake leads to another. You can learn a lot from all of this. Because he was very slow to recognize the significance of the problem he had created. Very slow. He didn't. That's another thing that you need to learn. That sometimes we all, not sometimes, but we all say stupid things. Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, your first line is defense. You try and improve yourself so that you don't say stupid things. But in life, you're going to say stupid things. It's going to happen. The next thing is, how do I react when I say something stupid? You see that? Another fact that comes into the picture, one's stubbornness, one's ego, that prevents the person from rectifying it, to acknowledge, to admit that I said something stupid. Now, and you have to understand, in certain types of damage, there's a term called damage control. Yeah, it's the best idea is to put out the fire right away. Don't overlook a small fire in a forest. You know, you just, that's not a good idea. I'll come back to it because it's a forest. This is exactly the case. So that's the second mistake, is he doesn't put it out right away. He's very slow to recognize, because in his mind, what's the big deal? What did I do? Then, but meanwhile, by doing that, it becomes a bigger fire. And the longer the thing lasts, the worse it gets, because then, I mean, you know, the newspapers are looking for stuff. They're looking for controversy, so they're going to... The irony is, you'd think that you're dealing with a person whose whole life is based upon saying the correct thing. There are certain people, certain professions, where that's the essence of it. A master politician is someone who's learned how to speak to people, who knows what to say, knows not what not to say. He says the politically correct thing. So you got to wonder as to what happened over there. That's another question. And all the mistakes that he makes. So then he starts apologizing. But the apologies aren't sufficient. They're not satisfactory. So it keeps going on and on. And now it's a question. Now, I don't know what the political outcome will be, because now the whole party has to be concerned. The President Bush has to distance himself. He didn't come out openly that he wants him to resign, but all of this has been created because of one reason. The person didn't understand what the Rambam said. That's your seeker for the goof. The best thing would have been just to be quiet, I mean, originally, and just get up and say a perfunctory thing, and we want to extend our best wishes, serve this country, say general things. Anybody knows you're dealing with someone that you got to be careful with. You got to be very, very careful when you get up in a situation like that. Because you're called upon to praise this man, but you have to realize that this man has certain baggage, has certain elements to him that could be associated, you know, with negative things, with racism. So it's not that difficult. It's not that, certainly for someone that's his area, a politician, it's not that difficult to sit back and craft a speech which praises him in ways that have nothing to do with the elements of his past of segregation, and avoid those areas which could be endorsing that. Now, in my opinion, this is what happened. This is... How is it? Now, unless you say this person has no experience, you know, he's... This is not his field, he's not... But this is his field, this is his life. This is what I think happened. I think that he did not get up there with the intention of offending people. That does not make sense. He didn't stop and think that I'm going to give a jab at the liberals or at the blacks or integration. I'm going to let them know that I'm not really happy with this. I don't think that was his intention at all. I can understand how these mistakes can come about. Like from the perspective, a rabbi can make a similar kind of a mistake. Usually, it comes about when you haven't bothered to prepare. Now, sometimes, let's take the case of a rabbi. A rabbi has to go to a lot of events, and a lot of it is like bar mitzvahs and weddings and a shalom zech, whatever it is. The basic function of a rabbi today is to praise people, tell them how wonderful they are. We're faced with the job, right? That's why he's there. The divrei Torah that he mentions in the course of doing it are only meant to enhance the praise. Yeah, but even so, it's got to tie into the praise. Now, sometimes a person's very busy, and sometimes, you know, he doesn't have enough time to sit down and prepare and whatever, and so you're going to wing it. Now, when you're winging it, there could be dangers. Because if you don't have all, maybe you don't have all the facts, or you don't think of all the things you're saying, it could be any manner of things. In your context, you may be bringing it up to praise, but it could have harmful association because maybe it's the second marriage and you're saying something positive, but it's connected somehow to the first marriage and it wasn't the right thing to say. You know, these things happen. They also happen. She said it wasn't intentional, but had the person put in enough preparation, he would have thought it through. Or sometimes you want to, because of that, there's a tendency to overcompensate. Sometimes, you know, you feel guilty, you didn't have enough time, and let's say it's someone's birthday from the shul, an important person, but you didn't really have time. So you're looking for stuff to overcompensate. And what you did when you were in that position, this committee, and what you did was so good. But then you don't realize that that there was something with that committee that has left a bad taste. So your intention was to overcut. You didn't even have to bring it up in the first place. But after the fact, like, this is, like, embarrassing. You see what I'm saying? In a case like that, now I'm going to be Malamed Schuss. We just learned about the Gemara. I'm going to be Malamed Schuss for Thurman. And I'm going to say that I don't think that was his intention. To say that it would have been greater had you been president because of the segregation. I don't think he was thinking about that. Because that's out of his mind, and he's dealing with this guy now. This guy's been accepted and whitewashed clean, so to speak. I think it was something like that. That he really didn't think through, and he wasn't prepared. And he wanted to really go overboard to say how great you are, and had you been the president, that's what he was referring to. Without thinking of all the consequences. Had he stopped, had I reviewed the speech, and so there are many times that you have that. That's why you show your article, or you may want to share your speech. If it's an important speech that I'm making in front of a different and a new group that's I don't know, that's very critical, I'm going to say things very, very carefully. And then I'll ask somebody to look at it, and that person will say, well, 1 second, that sentence over here. See, it carries a different implication. They may look, oh, you're right, let's modify it. You follow what I'm saying? That's why the Rambam said that you shouldn't print anything until you've reviewed it 100 times, whatever. I mean, because it goes out to the public. And the words, however well-intentioned, could have a negative implication. That is my opinion as to what took place. I don't think that he would have gotten up there thinking, I'm going to very, very heavily suggest that I would have been much happier had we had segregation these last few. Doesn't make sense, that, unless you want to say he's self-destructive. That's a different type of theory. Then he's saying he's self-destructive. And you see by his reaction now, he's trying to apologize. That's not what he wanted to say. But again, he didn't realize that that's not the way to praise him. You just avoid that whole subject. You don't, by praising him and saying how great it would have been had you been president, which he just wanted to say it to compliment the person, make him feel good, but then he was opening himself up to all of this. That's what he should have said. He should have gotten up the next day and said, I don't know what I was thinking. I didn't think through the consequences. That's not what I meant. And I said something stupid, totally stupid, because I wasn't prepared, and I just wanted... He should have admitted to all of that. And I apologized to anyone. No, he did not. The reason I think he was slow to apologize is precisely because he himself didn't realize what that he was saying something that... Generally speaking, when you get caught up in that, when you do say something which the other person is offended, but you, it's so very remote from your intention, so it's hard for you to believe that he's taking it to me seriously. That's all I meant. That's my interpretation. But you learn from this that the virtue of Shisika, that a person that's in the habit of practicing Shisika and recognizing that so much of what we say is unnecessary and so much of what we say is absolute nonsense, if you had that kind of humbleness, then you would have been careful. You wouldn't go out there and then talk this way for like recklessly. It's like reckless speech. He put himself in the lion's den, so to speak. The only other comment is, this may be more in terms of the political, I'm not making a political comment, is, in my opinion, because you asked the question of whether he should resign or not. Do I say he should resign? And it's right now it's a tough battle, and the pressure that's on him, in my opinion, it's really morally wrong to demand that he resign. Absolutely morally wrong, because he made a mistake. Much more serious mistakes have been made. For example, the last president, what he was involved in, and technically speaking, and so on and so forth, that was much more impeachable, in my opinion. This is a mistake, but you're telling me, what about the obligation to forgive? The obligation to forgive, that if a person says something which is wrong, which is stupid, which carries this implication, he has an obligation to apologize, to clarify himself. No crime was committed. Now, we learn, according to the Torah, that if somebody offends you, they have a chiyuv, they have to do tshuva. They have to apologize. They have to solicit your forgiveness. It's very, very difficult. Because if you don't forgive, they have to keep coming back. But it does reach a point where if they've done everything possible and they've asked others to intercede, and you refuse to forgive them, then you cross the boundary line, and then you become the sinner. The one who was offended now becomes the sinner because they refuse to forgive. The spotlight now switches to the other side. Why can't you forgive? Well, what was done? What did this person do? Unless you're going to say, are you claiming right now that he's racist? And well, look at his policies. If he's a racist, look at his policies, look at his positions. That has nothing to do with what he said at a birthday party. But other than that, without that birthday party, so you have no case against him. He's okay. He's acceptable. So because of that, those things that he said at that birthday party, which was stupid things, that makes him into a racist and it's unforgivable and you cannot forgive? Now I say that rishus, the inability to forgive in a situation like that, in my opinion, is much, much worse than whatever he did. Much, much worse. It's a much greater defect. People who can't forgive are much worse than people who offend. Because what you're saying is, the other person made a mistake. It was an instinct, whatever it was, so he insulted you. But now he's thought it over and he's doing tshuva. You, however, are saying that no, my ego was hurt. Once my ego was hurt, that's evil. I can't tolerate it. I can't. There's no way that this could ever be changed. That's a much, much worse defect. In truth, you see, when you're comparing this to the case of Clinton, well, then these self-same people, basically Democrats, oh, well, there should be forgiveness. Why can't we forgive? Why can't we give? Yeah, I'm not talking about the point over there. Was that it has nothing to that point has nothing to do with forgiveness. It wasn't a matter that we were insulted and we were forgiven. That was a matter of if you do certain types of crimes, are you still fit to hold office or not? That was the issue, whatever it is. I'm not taking a stand on that. I'm merely saying that in that case, forgiveness wasn't appropriate. The person commits a certain type of a crime, and that's an impeachable offense. It's not... Well, you can forgive them. You can forgive the person as a person, but there's a... He can no longer be fit to serve. Here, it's a matter of forgiveness because you're saying that he offended people. So then, okay, he offended people. So he apologizes, so they forgive him. Okay, it's restored. The case is closed. That's why I say I can't understand, or I can't justify the extent of the reaction. To me, this is not an impeachable offense. It's something that everybody can learn from. And I can't imagine any politician who hasn't said offensive things. They've all said offensive things. They've all, and many black politicians have said offensive things about whites, and maybe they get treated to a different standard. I'm not raising the issue of a double standard. I'm just saying that he was wrong. He was offensive. He should introspect. Why didn't he recognize the racist implication? All correct. But once he makes good on that, then I don't see why he can't be forgiven. I don't agree with that. I just want to differentiate, because the point is being made, rightly so. Jews take offense when people say things that are insulting to Jews. Yeah, if somebody got up and said complimentary things about Hitler, then I wouldn't accept any kind of a justification. Well, I was just referring to his ability to reorganize the army. That's what I meant. No. Because... You can't talk about Hitler, and nobody can. Nobody knows anything and knows that this is the one, his whole essence is to kill Jews and destruct the person. So and you find room for admiration, that means you hate Jews. You identify with them. There's no wiggle room over there. However, if somebody makes a derogatory statement about a black or a derogatory statement about a Jew, that's something which is inherently a racist thing to say. That's more significant. Then it's not a question of an apology. I wouldn't ask someone to apologize. Why would he apologize? And that's what you believe. So I would differentiate between ill-chosen remarks which could be interpreted one way. Now, in this, you have to ask yourself this question. In praising someone like Thurman and saying that that things would have been a heck of a lot better had he been the president, does that mean, are you talking about segregation, or are you talking about other policies that you liked, that you supported, and so on? That's what remains, that's the burden, to explain why it is that you had no reference to the segregation thing, because that's the country, is integrated. I don't know, it could be that this, I don't know. I'm saying that the nature of the offense is different than if he basically said something bad about blacks. There have been a lot of people have gotten into trouble in the country because they were, again, the same thing, thoughtless, even people in sports. People in different areas, because this country is extremely sensitive today towards that type of phenomenon. Yeah, any kind of bias, any kind of a mentioning about athletics which has to do with racial, which can be taken the wrong way. People are extremely sensitive about that. For all these reasons, obviously, again, it was stupid to even go there. But if you want to be honest now, the question would be, similarly, yeah, you really have to ask the same thing, what if it was the Jews? That's clear. That if, let's say that Strom Thurmond was anti-Semitic at that point, anti-Israel. Say, you know, and the same comment. Things would have been much better. So Jews would take offense. What are you talking about, much better? That we wouldn't have supported Israel, or that Jews would not have had their rights? Well, whatever. You have to be honest that way. Jews would be very, very offended. Bush Sr., current president's father, was decimated because of a remark he made about Jews, which was, in my opinion, wasn't the worst thing in the world. Ironically, Jews, when it comes to voting, is a whole separate area. It's more what a person says than what his policies are. He made some kind of a comment about all these lobbyists for Israel coming down on me, you know? When Jews heard that, that's it. He maybe got 19%, he got the minimal of the Jewish vote. So Jews are very sensitive. It wasn't an anti-Semitic comment, but Jews are very sensitive. Now you have to ask yourself the question. Now, honestly speaking, I don't try to be overly sensitive. When people make comments, and even make comments about Jews, I don't just get sensitive and close my mind. That's it. Now, I, in fact, voted for Bush, in spite of that comment. I didn't think he was anti-Semitic. And I thought, from a policy position, he'd be better for Israel. Anyways, in a case like that, I would demand an explanation. What do you mean? How could you possibly have been happy with him being president when X, Y, and Z? Now, if I was not convinced, if it seemed to me that he, but in this statement, it seems to me, if he meant segregation, that's what he means, then you're right. Then he's unfit because he's revealing his true colors.
But that was a major running point for Armstrong.
Well, I don't know.
Issue when you hold out of states' rights. That is true.
But when you're saying afterwards, had you been president, I mean, it's a vague kind of a statement. What do you mean by that? That's what he has to get clear on. That's what I'm saying. If I didn't say I would just forgive him, I'm saying you shouldn't just look at it in a one-sided way. Like, we're offended, so we just condemn. That's it. We don't have any responsibility over here. Those who condemn have an equal responsibility to come to grips with the obligation to forgive, if it is in order, if forgiveness is in order. You can't just say that's it. He said it, he shouldn't have said, I can't forgive him, forget about it. And I'm saying the same thing if you offend the Jews. If you're offended, just because you're an offended party, you're the victim, that doesn't mean that you can do it, that's it. You have no restraint anymore. No, I'm trying to show you that according to Halacha, the victim can become the sinner. You have an obligation to forgive if the explanation is satisfactory. The person has done enough. Well, what can I do for you? Then it's just your achzarius. It's just your cruelty, so to speak. Your arrogance that you can't forgive. That's the point that I'm making. That neither party, if this were governed by Jewish criteria, neither party would be free. He's certainly not. You're not free to hurt other people. But the victim has this feeling that, oh, I'm the victim. I don't have to forgive. That's it. I won't speak to him. No! The victim also has obligations and restraints within the framework of the halachic system.